We'll hear argument now in the case of the matter of Fulton. Mr. Koch.
May it please the court and counsel, there are three fundamental reasons that support the reversal of the decision of the United States District Court, which affirmed a decision of the Bankruptcy Court denying the debtor's objection to the claim of the National Bank and Trust Company of Sycamore. Those reasons are, number one, that the objection that was filed by the debtors was legally sufficient. Number two, given the ground rules established by the court at the hearing on the objection, both courts, that is the Bankruptcy Court and the District Court, erred in relying upon the debtor's failure to introduce evidence to support the objection in denying the objection, or to put it differently, the court erred in not conducting an evidentiary hearing on the objection.
Let me clear something up for myself. Are you complaining, or was the complaint against the debt itself that is disputing the amount of the debt, or the way the liquidation of the assets were conducted?
I would say it would be twofold, Your Honor. It's a primary attack on the amount of the debt, but also questions with respect to and issues with respect to the liquidation of a certain collateral by the bank.
I thought you had agreed to the amount of the debt. That figure was not in dispute.
I do not believe that is the case, Your Honor. If you're speaking with respect to the presentation that occurred at the confirmation hearing, you are?
Yes.
I think that the with respect to the amount of the debt at the confirmation, those particular issues at the confirmation hearing addressed more in the nature of the feasibility to plan and the debtor's ability to make payments on the debt.
So was there an agreement as to the amount of the debt at that time?
I do not believe so, Your Honor.
Looked to me like there was, that the beef was that something had been happened to the assets that were being liquidated.
Well, ultimately, you get... Pardon me, Your Honor. I'm sorry for interrupting. What you get into, Your Honor, is if there was collateral that was liquidated and the debtors weren't given proper credit, or if it was not done in compliance with the applicable provisions of the Illinois
Commercial Code. That's not the complaint.
Right. That would impact the amount of the debt, obviously.
Yeah, but that would be an accidental byproduct of the complaint.
That's correct, Your Honor.
The allegations about the liquidation of the collateral, those concern events prior to the confirmation of the plan?
Yes, Your Honor. Those particular events would have preceded the confirmation hearing. However, facts with respect to the liquidation of the collateral were not determined by the debtors until subsequent to the confirmation hearing.
What do you mean they weren't determined? You mean they didn't find out about it, or nobody called them about it? Did they ask about it? Did they wonder what happened to their assets?
Those particular issues and facts were discovered, I guess would be the best way to put it, Your Honor, post-confirmation in a separate proceeding pending before the state court, before the parties. Going back to my argument, and the third reason that the court erred is its application of this court's decision in Adair versus Sherman to preclude any challenge by the debtors to the bank's claim. First, let's look at the objection itself. I would submit to the court that the objection was legally sufficient. An objection, the law is rather clear, an objection to a claim need not be pled with specificity. Really, the only requirement is that a claimant is put on notice with respect to issues involving the claim. Once the objection is made...
This is not a question of specificity, as I understand it, but of time. Is there anything in the Bankruptcy Code or the Federal Rules of Bankruptcy Procedure that specifies what the right time to object to a claim is?
No, there isn't, Your Honor. In fact, the rules themselves do not specify when an objection need be filed. There is no absolute requirement that it has to be filed by a date certain. However, in this case...
Isn't that kind of puzzling to you? There are certainly a lot of timing rules in the bankruptcy rules, and in fact the Supreme Court is this term hearing a case from this circuit about whether not observing one of those timing requirements is jurisdictional or not.
Mm-hmm.
But it's your position that for something as basic as objecting to the amount of a claim. There is no timing rule anywhere in the code or the bankruptcy rule.
In the context of a Chapter 11, Your Honor, there is no absolute drop-dead date, if you will, for filing an objection. However, in this case, we do have the benefit of specific provisions within the debtor's plan that was confirmed by the court that did put a drop-dead date with respect to when objections to claims had to be filed, and those that particular drop-dead date was 60 days after the effective date of the plan. And I don't believe there's any dispute in this case that the debtor's objection to the bank's claim was timely. There may be disputes certainly on other issues, but that is not an issue in this case. Your Honor, I think in the court, I think if you take a look at the objection and review it, its legal sufficiency is obvious. The real issue here involves the sale of stock by the bank. Given the legal sufficiency of the objection, at that point, the bankruptcy court should have conducted an evidentiary hearing upon the objection. Unfortunately, that did not occur. The record really reflects that the ground rules established by the court at the hearing was that the court would only consider legal arguments. No evidence would be taken. And I would submit that the bankruptcy court should have conducted an evidentiary hearing. Despite those ground rules that were established at the hearing, in reaching its decision denying the debtor's objection, the bankruptcy court faulted the debtors for failing to produce any evidence to support their objection. That, we believe, was error given the ground rules established. The district court, we would submit, further compounded that error by again faulting the debtors for failing to introduce evidence in support of their claim, or objection to the claim. Finally, we take issue with the decision of the district court and the bankruptcy court that would that held that the debtors were precluded from objecting to the bank's claim, relying primarily on this court's decision in Adair versus Sherman. The bankruptcy courts simply held that the debtors were precluded from challenging the secured status of the bank's claim. Pardon me, I'm getting into my rebuttal. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Mr. Koch. Mr. Borges.
May it please the court, my name is John Voorhees. I represent the National Bank and Trust Company of Sycamore. Your Honors, there are really two primary issues here. One is whether the objection itself was sufficient. Was it sufficiently pled? Did it sufficiently raise questions of law? And two, were the debtors bound by the confirmation order? Their prior positions, both in pleadings, the plan, the disclosure statement, and in forbearance agreements with the bank. With respect to the sufficiency of the objection.
Let me start with the same question I asked Mr. Koch. Is there, in the bankruptcy code or the federal rules of bankruptcy procedure, any deadline for objecting to the amount of a claim in a corporate reorganization?
Your Honor, there's not a specific deadline. However,
then presumably if there's no deadline in the rules, presumably the deadline is one set by the judge, right?
As a practical matter, no, Your Honor, because here...
You mean it's not set by the code or the rules or the judge?
No, Your Honor, it is set by the code.
Okay.
But it's not a specific deadline. Your Honor, as a matter...
I'm totally lost.
Well, let me
it's
try
a deadline, but you can't find it anywhere in the rules or the code or the decisions of the judge.
It's driven by Section 1129 of the Bankruptcy Code, Your Honor. Necessarily, in order to confirm a plan over the objection of a creditor, a debtor must comply with both 1129A and 1129B of the Bankruptcy Code. A secured creditor's claim is split into two parts where the value of the collateral does not cover the amount of the claim, an unsecured portion and a secured portion, the amount of the value of the collateral. Here, the bank was oversecured. So the value...
I don't understand what that has to do with the issue here. You may not perceive what's underlying my question. There are two things underlying my question. One, if there's no deadline in the code or the rules, one would think it's set by the judge. It looked like the judge set a deadline of 60 days in this plan. Confirms the plan has its own time requirement.
Well, Your Honor, the judge also determined the amount of the bank's claim at $2.1 million in that same order, which I think is binding on the debtor. To the extent the order and the plan are inconsistent, I think that the order controls over the plan.
The plan is a judicial order. It's confirmed by the court. It becomes a judicial order.
That's correct, Your Honor, it's a contract among the various parties to the proceeding. The order, however, is necessary to implement the provisions of the plan, and in determining...
There's a problem underlying this case. There's a large segment of bankruptcy cases where the plan of reorganization comes extremely early in the case, and the plan is basically sell the assets, liquidate the firm, and we will then have a proceeding to determine who gets what out of this pot that's created.
Correct.
If I understand your position correctly, and the district court's position, it is that in all of those cases, as soon as the plan is confirmed and the assets are sold, none of the creditors' claims can be disputed anymore.
That's not correct, Your Honor, and I do not believe that. There is an ability to object to claims post-confirmation, but not a secured creditor's claim.
Presumably because the plan reserves that to some time afterward.
That's
but
correct.
It looks like this plan did exactly that.
That's correct, Your Honor. However, with respect to a secured creditor's claim, where the claim is oversecured, that determination necessarily has to be made in order to make a judgment whether the plan is confirmable. Because under 1129A8, a plan is only confirmable if all the parties, all the creditors in each class, agree to confirmation of the plan, if they accept the plan. If they don't accept the plan, which the bank did not, then you move on to 1129B and the cram down provision of the plan. And that says, with respect to secured creditors, that a secured creditor is entitled to the present value.
He's entitled to get at least as much as he would get in a Chapter 7 liquidation. That's fine.
That's correct, but it's also the...
And I assume that's a constraint on whatever can be done in an objection to the claim. But your claim is, your argument here, as I understand, certainly the district court's holding, is not that that states the minimum valuation that the creditor ultimately gets. The argument you've made and the argument the district court accepted is that you get whatever its face amount was and there can be no quibbling with it. That's a very different argument from my client is entitled to the cram down minimum.
Well, Your Honor, a secured creditor is entitled to more than just that it would receive in a Chapter 7. It's also entitled to deferred payments over time that are equal to the present value of its secured claim. The secured amount of the claim
you get in Chapter 7.
Your Honor, necessarily, the value of the secured claim is the value of the collateral. The judge had to, in order to determine whether 1129B was met and the debtor's plan can be confirmed, had to determine the secured value of this claim. Because it was undisputed that the bank was oversecured, the amount of the claim was necessarily determined by the court at $2.1 million, and that cannot be challenged in a collateral proceeding, which this claim objection is. There are additional reasons why I think this court should affirm the decisions below. In addition to this being an impermissible collateral attack, the debtors are barred by both the doctrines of judicial and equitable estoppel. This bankruptcy proceeding was not the first dispute between the parties.
Yeah, Counsel Lane, I don't see what estoppel can have to do with this. Estoppel is a doctrine having to do with the effect of the outcome of suit number one in suit number two. There isn't any suit number two here. In Adair, there was a suit number two. If all you've got is a single unitary piece of litigation, estoppel has no bearing.
We don't know.
The case might have a bearing, not adhering to deadlines might have a bearing, but I don't see what effect estoppel could have within a single case.
Well, Your Honor, I do believe we have two separate proceedings. We had a confirmation proceeding, which is a contested proceeding, and we also have a claim objection, which
there's
is a separate
one,
contested.
There's just one bankruptcy here, or we wouldn't even have subject matter jurisdiction.
You're correct, Your Honor. There is one bankruptcy. However, within a single bankruptcy case, you can have separate contested proceedings. That's why when an adversary proceeding is brought in a bankruptcy case, it's given a separate adversary proceeding number. They're considered separate pieces of litigation for bankruptcy.
This isn't even an adversary proceeding. It's a contested
matter
in the court case.
You're right, Your Honor. It is a contested matter, which is treated for most purposes like
it's a contested matter within the court case. So what we would do in adversary proceedings is not relevant. We come back to my question. What significance could estoppel have within a single piece of litigation? Right? Law of the case, I understand, but law of the case, things decided by the bankruptcy judge, does not bind anyone on appeal. That's why we have the appellate mechanism.
I understand, Your Honor. The debtor has taken the position itself that the amount of the bank's claim is $2.1 million and that it was oversecured on numerous occasions. It did so in two forbearance agreements that preceded these particular bankruptcy cases. Each of those forbearance agreements were the result of prior Chapter 11s filed by these debtors. Those Chapter 11s were dismissed in consideration of the bank's agreement to forbear from exercising its state court remedies. The debts were restructured, and as part of those contracts, the debtors acknowledged the specific amount of the claims and also stated that they were properly represented by counsel. Then we have a plan disclosure statement that were filed by the debtors. In the plan, the debtor didn't say the allowed amount of the bank's claim will be amortized over 20 years and paid in 7. What the debtor said is the claim is $2.1 million. It's going to be amortized over 20 years, a balloon payment in 7 years at 10% interest, and the monthly amount of that payment is going to be X. That's unusual. That's not usually how you do it. You usually provide a formula and a plan for how the allowed amount of the claim will be paid once the allowed amount of the claim is determined. Here, the debtor specifically took the position that the amount of our claim was $2.1 million, and here are the exact dollars that are going to be paid on a monthly basis over the life of this plan. That, I think, binds the debtor to that $2.1 million post-confirmation.
As a practical matter, could the debtor have ascertained the status of that collateral prior to the approval of a confirmation plan?
I believe so, Your Honor.
How would that have happened?
There was a continual communication between the creditor and the debtor.
Was there?
Yes, Your Honor.
Was there such communication?
There was, Your Honor. There was.
The creditor continually notified the debtor about what was happening to the assets were being held.
Your Honor, I don't know with respect to these specific sales.
The record doesn't show it.
It does. It's not in the record, Your Honor.
All right.
Was there any opportunity for discovery of any sort prior to the confirmation?
There was, Your Honor. There was. Rule 2004 of the Bankruptcy Code, the bankruptcy rules, allows a debtor to take any discovery, and it's described by courts as a fishing expedition that allows a debtor to determine any relationships between itself and creditors. That wasn't done here. I don't know why the debtor didn't do that, but they didn't.
In other words, your view is the debtor should have done the due diligence of finding out whether or not that collateral was still around or whether he was going to have to pony up a lot of extra cash to...
Correct, Your Honor, either as part of the bankruptcy case or before when it entered into the forbearance agreement.
Well, I'm sorry, I didn't hear the last phrase.
I said either during the bankruptcy court case or before when the forbearance were entered into originally.
I see.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, counsel. Anything further, Mr. Patrick?
Very briefly.
Just to follow up quickly on the court's questions with respect to timing of filing objections, in this case, we did have a plan confirmed by the bankruptcy court that did provide a 60-day drop-dead date for filing objections, and the objection was filed by the debtor in a timely manner. Secondly, Section 1123B3 of the Bankruptcy Code does contemplate provisions like what were inserted in this particular plan, reserving a debtor's right to object to claims. Thirdly, the plan that was confirmed by the bankruptcy court also included a provision defining what an allowed claim was. An allowed claim was defined as one in which no objection had been timely filed. The plan further provided that defined term, allowed claims, only allowed claims, would be paid under the plan. And I would also remind the court that there was no finding by the bankruptcy court within its confirmation order confirming that plan containing those provisions that the bank's claim was an allowed claim. For those reasons, we would request that the decision of the district court be reversed. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thanks to both counsel. The case will be taken.